God brings good out of everything. It is what he does. And I think, you know, the fame game, the viral success game, you've been in it longer than I have. And I think what you'll see is any normal person who doesn't have a lot of trauma in their past would quit after like a month of it. They'd be like, this sucks so much.
Terrible.
I can't deal with the highs and lows. And I think that God takes those of us who honestly kind of need it, and maybe not always in the most healthy way, because we're the only ones who won't quit.
Right. I didn't think God would like me, so I didn't like people who like God. People who would use God to tell me what a bad person I was, and I was like, I don't need God for that. I tell myself I'm a bad person all the time. Sometimes we feel like we don't belong. Sometimes we feel like no matter how hard we try, we will never be good enough. But we still try. Together, broken and battered. So misfits, outcasts, chronic screw-ups, clinically depressed, weirdos, and Christians who don't fit inside the box. The show is for everyone trying to get better. The show is for me. So get comfortable and meet us in the back row. Welcome to The Back Row with Jamie Kilstein. My name is Jamie Kilstein. I am a comedian. I am a writer. I do sketch comedy. I have depression. I am riddled with anxiety. My friend, this is how we became friends. My guest, Jen Fulweiler, I heard a myth that there was a lady who sold out the Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas on her own. And at first I was just like, you know, when you first hear about someone and they're successful and your first reaction is like, yuck.
Right. You're like, you're finding things wrong with them immediately.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But she's probably on coke.
Yeah,
so,
yep.
You know,
she's probably on coke. Or like, even when I found out you were religious, I was like, oh, so that's your fucking angle.
Your shtick.
Instead of being excited about, which by the way, I cannot imagine the amount of shit as this grows that people are going to be like, oh, that's what he's doing now.
Oh yeah.
He's the Christian guy. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And so I heard about that and then totally wrote you off, ignored you. Then came to you in the midst of a complete meltdown where I got baptized and I was showing up to comedy clubs. If you're in Austin, specifically the Creek in the Cave, where that patio, you could be a nun and you walk to the Creek in the Cave patio and you're just suddenly like, do I want to inject heroin and have a threesome? Like,
there is something about that spot that is, it's in the air.
I haven't smoked cigarettes since I was 20 and I show up to there after jujitsu, that chain smoker complete. in front of you. So anyway, so I get baptized and I was like, all right, I'm like, I can't do comedy. I can't do any of this stuff. And I was like, I need to find a Christian comedian to essentially convince me to quit comedy. And
and not to kill yourself. I remember you were talking about
I was
about
also
that.
Trying to kill. Uh-huh. Yeah. It was like, hey, do I kill myself? Do I quit comedy? Or I don't know. Is there another option?
Third option?
Like, that was it. And so our friend, we have a mutual friend, Allie, and she told me about you. And I wrote you, I assume, I don't remember it, an insane message on Instagram. And you were like, let's meet up. And we went to hang out. And again, all I want is you to be like, Jesus fed the poor. Jesus would never do stand-up comedy. Just quit and have a family and like work at a nonprofit or whatever. And I remember... You show up. I had to ask you if this is true because it felt like a fever dream. You show up.
Every interaction with me feels like a fever dream. That's, I hear that a lot.
Bro, you showed up to a Starbucks in a fur fucking coat and sat down and you just said, I want you to know I've read everything about you, good and bad, and you're going to play Madison Square Garden.
Yep.
And I was like, fuck. And then we became best friends. And that is our origin story.
Okay. And the first thing that he said to me as part of our conversation, and it was so sincere that you said this, and I just go into like dark laughter every time I think about this. You say, so clearly we're going to be friends. That was clear in about the first minute of our interactions.
Yes.
And you said, you know, you should know that every friend who has ever talked me out of killing myself has killed themselves. So you should, just FYI.
So I know.
I was like, don't kill yourself, Jamie, but oh, wow.
I know like 10 years ago, if someone said you're going to join the ranks of Robin Williams, you would have assumed it was comedically.
Right.
But no. Yeah. It's befriending me and then killing himself. So congratulations, yeah. You and Robin, headshots on my tombstone.
Yeah.
We'll put your black and white 8x10s on my grave.
And what's funny is that you one of the first voice memos you sent me was, you said, you know, I really thought this friendship was going to be mostly you talking me out of killing myself and telling me to feed the poor, but you might be crazier than I am. And this is a lot of me encouraging you.
Such a reveal, such an amazing reveal that I got to like mentor you in any way. Yeah. I think you bought me a coffee that day, not to be nice, but because I couldn't afford coffee.
Yeah.
And you were just like, oh no, we got to do. And I was like, and can I get a water? Like, I was so excited.
I'm like, live it up. I sold out the Paramount. You can get any water you want. The sparkling, the ethos.
Not the sparkling. Yeah. I feel like we're very much like the movie Twins, where you're like the good looking Arnold Schwarzenegger and I'm the Danny DeVito character.
Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible.
This can be, maybe this ends up being the theme of the podcast, not for the podcast to be like, you're a mess, but also I think that when we all assume it's just us.
Uh-huh.
And I probably assume someone like you wouldn't be going through having the same kind of thoughts as me for the obvious Danny DeVito-esque reasons. But then you have your whole own baggage reason to not think it, because you are very successful, very like the amount of times, and I felt so pathetic, but the amount of times you were talking me out of depression or suicide or whatever, I would be like, yes, this is good advice, but also it's easy for you to say, because, you know, you're repped by UTA, you have a beautiful family, you have children. So, you know, maybe when I get there, I can take this advice. But what people need to realize, it's like, no, it just doesn't go away. No matter how successful you are, no matter how much you're struggling, we can all relate to each other. And then that's another reason it's so dumb that we're always fucking fighting.
Right.
Because it's like, man, if you could see past each other's differences and realize that, like, no, we're all kind of train wrecks.
Absolutely. And I want to build on what you said there, that certainly people in my circles, I have 6 kids. I'm a mom. I'm in those circles of other women who are moms and have big families. We often use it as an excuse the opposite direction. Like, I can't get over trauma. I can't heal because I've got a family. I'm running a household. And the single guy over there, he has time to go to therapy and take nature walks.
Yeah.
I don't have time.
I can't do ketamine therapy in downtown Austin. Yeah. I have to take my kid to soccer.
Right? I can't go to an ayahuasca shaman. Like, that would make the PTA meeting super weird. You know? Oh, can't get kicked out again.
Yeah. Now I'm imagining you showing up to PTA being like, I see through all of you.
Right, exactly.
I know what you all are.
Exactly. Your auras are all off.
Right. You know, I heard this thing, and I went to, me and my girlfriend went to lunch with our parent friends. That's the life we're at now, which is very new. We had a meal with there were 2 children and 2 adults.
You're microdosing parenting.
Bro. Perfect. That's we're just like dipping our toes in a little bit. Yeah. Not the whole ceremony. Right. I'm not going to babysit Josiah, but I'll have a burger with him.
Yeah.
And we pitched this to them and they agreed. I'm praying that you're not the one who told me this, but you might've been, in which case like this will get real and that's fine. Someone told me, you know, you probably have all these great thoughts about having kids and what a good parent you're going to be. But the second you have kids, that's all out the window.
I didn't say that for sure.
I didn't think you did.
No, no.
I just had a momentary panic.
Yeah. Because
it could have been one of my famous friends.
I've done that before when I'm like, some idiot told me this nonsense that was so stupid. They were saying, and then it's the person I'm talking to. No, that wasn't me. Don't worry.
Oh my goodness. But like, I'm sure there are obviously instances. I'm not a fucking parent. I don't know how hard it is. I'm sure. I mean, we've joked about stuff you look back on and you're like, oh, that's rough. But I also think that like, I hate
like married people who tell that to engaged people, or parents who tell where they're like, your life's about to get bad. And it's like, that tells me your life is bad.
Right.
And instead of working on it, you're just shitting on other people. It's the crabs in a bucket thing.
Well, and it's not wanting to take responsibility. Parents do that to other parents, that they'll see someone with little kids in the grocery store and they're like, oh, you think you got it now. You just wait till they're teens. It's so horrible. It's like, don't put your misery on me. Right. Just because things aren't going well. And I get that. But rather than seeking human connection and saying, hey, I'm struggling, maybe as someone who doesn't have kids, or maybe as someone who has kids that are a younger age, maybe you could give me a fresh insight that I need to get through this. But instead, you're hostile and you just want to convince yourself that it's going to go this way for everyone.
Yeah. And this is the same. I gave this advice to a 4-year-old yesterday.
Good.
The actual adult advice you gave.
Yeah.
Where I was teaching jujitsu, and there's a little 4-year-old who was just being a little shit, and I love him. And I always say, I never say you're being a little shit. I always go, hey man, you're better than this, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of, and I want to use that as a parent. Yeah.
And
so he had a new partner and he was just like, just throwing a little fit. And he was like, he's not doing it right. And I go, well, yeah, man, but wouldn't it be cooler if you could be a leader and show him what to do instead of pouting? That's
so
you,
sweet.
Adult. That's you, adult, who's just like, oh, wait till you have kids. You're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Help. Be helpful.
Right, right.
Instead of like, oh, you think your kid's not going to be on screens? I'm like, yeah, I would like that. And I'd maybe like some advice for that. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But going into it, essentially surrendering to all of the dreams I have for me being a good father, it's like, well, then I'm going to be a much worse father.
Right, right. And people underestimate the power. This sounds like a cliche, but it's so true. Love can do the most miraculous things.
Yeah.
I was the worst human being before I became a parent.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that I said I never wanted kids. I mean, that was my thing.
So I want to get into
that. I ended up having 6 babies in 8 years. So it was really funny that I was like, I don't want to have kids. I didn't even want to get married. I was like, that's not for me.
Right.
And I'm an only child. My husband's an only child. Most of my friends were only children. So, I mean, I forgot where babies come from. I mean, I'd heard about it in health class.
Yeah.
But I think I thought, human beings come into the world from a cloning room at the back of Starbucks.
Yeah,
complete
totally.
With a latte.
That's what the libs want. I'll tell you that.
Right.
I don't know. I don't even know what that means. I don't know what that means. It sounded right. It sounded right. I don't know what it means.
Oh, in the libs. So that's what I thought. And then I was told I wouldn't be able to have kids. I still send that doctor a Christmas card to be petty.
Dude.
And when we had all the little babies, it was like,
when you had to start stapling 2 cards together to fit all the kids in.
It's like a scroll that you unroll to see my whole family.
Is there buried treasure here? No, it's just Jen had more kids.
Yeah. And what shocked me, so I was truly just floored by the experience of being a parent.
Yeah.
But and nothing in my life, no amount of self-work, no amount of trips to Europe and gazing on mountaintops or whatever had moved the needle at all in terms of me being, I grew up as a spoiled, only just kind of middle class, only child. I didn't have chores. I never had a job. I mean, I was the classic spoiled middle class only child. And when my son was born, all of this selfishness and all of the bad parts of my personality, suddenly they started to change. Don't get me wrong, I'm still a terrible human being.
Sure. You're a comedian, we know.
But I started to change and transform because of this love that I experienced. Love truly conquers everything.
Yep.
And it sounds like a cliche,
but it's
so true.
I was talking about this with Tim Ross on the podcast. We were talking about marriage. And, you know, me and you were talking about my relationship before. And one of the things I said to Tim is that looking at marriage through the eyes of Christianity and what marriage actually is, instead of what my world and what your old world kind of thought it was, which is just like, time to fucking lock it down so I don't die alone.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or like, man, I really need
to have someone to split these bills with. Get it done.
I need health benefits.
Yeah.
And he's a dentist.
right.
Yeah. The actually thinking about it with like, oh, it's supposed to make you both closer to God. It's supposed to you know, when they talk about so many people, old Jamie included, when they would hear about like the man being a leader, it's like, oh, because all religious people are sexist. And it's like, no, women loved Jesus because Jesus actually gave them more of a voice than they had back right. then. You right. know, they were the first ones at his tomb. They were, he was talking to prostitutes and forgiving them. And when Jesus says to love your wife, like, or when the Bible says love your wife, like Jesus loved the church, it's like, yeah, man, because Jesus would die and did die for the church. It's not like, bitch, get me a sandwich.
That's in Proverbs. Yeah. Not the New Testament. Yeah.
Clip it. Timestamp that. The first time I quoted scripture, kind of, and that's how it ended.
Yeah.
That's the show. That's what this show is. And so it's being in this relationship that I know is going to lead to marriage, let alone when I have kids. Like what you just said with your kids is so reassuring, because I just go, the amount of times in old relationships where they'd do some shitty or we'd be in a fight and I would either be like, well, I'm either going to just like apologize to end this nightmare. I'm going to leave. I'm going to move on to another girl that will seem to be easier for at least a couple months, or I'm just not going to care. As opposed to this, and she will confirm this on the show. This isn't me like patting myself on the back. She could be so wrong. And I just go, well, what would a fucking leader do? Or what would like Jesus? It's another cliche. And you just go, oh, you know what? I'm actually going to be, instead of being like, she's wrong, I'm going to let her fucking yeah. grovel to me. I'm going to, which people get off on, makes right. you feel good. Yeah. I'm just going to be like, fuck, like I'm going to be the one. And so I can feel becoming a better person even through these like hardships. And I feel like that is just a precursor to being a parent, where you're like, oh, now I have to be a good person. Or you do what these other people do and you just go, ah, you're not going to be able to fight. Just try to survive. And which it's like, you shouldn't treat parenting like fucking Hunger Games, you know?
Oh, I know. And by the way, one of the things that I was a lifelong atheist. And when I first encountered Christianity, one of the things that I thought was so interesting, because I love history. So I'd read a lot of ancient history. I mean, I knew what the people around that time believed.
And again, you're so like smart. That. An old atheist Jamie would be like, Christians know how to read. Like, yeah, I'd just be like, such a fucking tool about
it. I had the same. I was like, I really thought that Christians were all idiots. Like yeah. that was very much, same. Very much my stereotype. So what I thought was so interesting is that the whole thing that Jesus has done is that he's turned suffering into a love generating act.
Ugh.
You see it with the crucifixion and the resurrection, which, right. you know, opened the gates of eternal life. And then that comes into your daily life when it's like, yeah, this is hard. It is hard. We are having a hard day with the kids or with my husband or whatever. But as Christians, we know this is actually only an opportunity for more love. Whereas like the ancient that. Romans, who were contemporaries of the first Christians, they would be like, how can I get this wife married off to some other guy? And like, maybe I can marry that senator's wife. We can right. like, you know,
I need goats.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like I'm tired of her mouth, you know?
yeah.
But Christianity teaches you that every moment that you encounter suffering, this great news, this is an opportunity to crack open more love yeah. into your life.
Did you ever have that atheist talking point, which I did? I think it was a Sam Harris talking point. That I always thought about, which was, and I would just like gleefully throw it out at happy religious people, which again, talk about projecting, right?
Oh yeah.
That same thing where I'm like, oh, look at them with their family and their joy and their whatever.
Frauds.
What about dinosaurs?
Yeah.
So the big thing was like, and I really thought I was a good person, even when I was like fucking up. It's the whole thing like, well, if you're just being good to like get into heaven,
right.
If you're being good just to not go to hell, are you really being good? So there's the whole thing that where they'd be like, oh, what? So you'd be like a murderer if Jesus wasn't around. And it was just such a way to shut it down. And now that I feel exactly how you feel and experience it daily. were times I thought I was good, taking it to that next Christ-like, as good as we can, level, you just go, oh, this is, it's so different. It's so different.
Yeah.
You know, I was hanging out with, the lead singer of my favorite, worship band, this guy, Corey from Red Rocks Worship. And he told me a story yesterday about how one of his mentors was like, just the most like joyful 70-year-old lifelong Christian, you know, grandpa, all this stuff. And he just goes, I could be wrong about all of it. And I would still, I wouldn't want to live any other way.
Right.
And I don't know, like, what do you think it is? Can you sum it up for secular people? Like, what the difference is between be a good person to be a good person and having this foundation?
Yeah, that was a big talking point of mine, too. My dad was the big atheist in my family and just the kindest person you could ever want to meet. Would give you the shirt off his back, just so... just kind. I mean, you just heard that word over and over with him. And that was my old talking point is we are good people just for the sake of it,
yeah.
Just for the sake of being good people. And but what I came to realize is that when we were being good people as atheists, we sensed love. We sensed goodness. And God is the source of that.
Right.
So in the moments, like when my dad would stay up all night to hold my youngest child who almost died in the neonatal intensive care unit after he was born, my dad would go there every night from midnight to 6 a.m. and just hold that baby all night long. My dad was tapped in to that love that ultimately comes from God.
We all have it.
Yeah, and when you become a Christian, you realize that love is... not a concept or an idea or a thing. Love is a person.
Yeah.
And you encounter, so it's all the love that I felt as an atheist and that I shared with the world, but I have now encountered the source of it.
So
that's what I say to secular people is, yes, you are genuinely good people. I love that. Wouldn't you like to know about the source
and also
of that love?
I feel like because once you are tapped into the source, and there are a lot of shitbag religious people. But at least I think what me and you try to do is once you're tapped into it, all of these little things, because I would be like, well, I'm a good person because I post that Black Lives Matter, right? Or I'm a good person because of this. But like, what were like my daily decisions? You know, when I was fighting with a girlfriend, did I forgive the way I forgive now?
Yeah.
Did I hold myself accountable? Did I try to be a leader? Nope,
right.
To all of those things.
Right.
It was all so exterior. Anything good I did was to make me look good.
Right.
And not on purpose, just because we're humans. And I think what you just said about love, that's why this was also the first time that I felt true forgiveness and grace, is because... essentially, when it comes to love and forgiveness, if you take Jesus out of the picture, it's pretty much based on a human to human interaction. So I have a good day with my girlfriend. I feel loved. My dad calls and is an asshole to me. I don't feel loved. This person says they forgive me for my past. I talk to you about my past. I feel forgiven. Somebody posts a mean comment on Instagram about my past, I am crumbling. And so when I think about why my life has changed and why even in my bad days, I feel like my bar is so much higher, it's because for the first time in general, doesn't matter if I'm talking to you or talking to someone who hates me, I know I'm loved. I know I'm forgiven. And so that then enables me to go do the same thing to other people, because even though I've never seen Jesus physically, I can go by his example.
Right.
And I've never had that before. Again, I only felt loved if the person right in front of me was showing me love. That person goes away and I'm by myself. Hoof. Yeah. Audible groans from the production team. It's impossible.
I wish that I had understood when I was so immersed in the secular world, and I was immersed, lifelong atheist.
We got to talk about this.
I never even thought God might exist. I mean, not right. even as a child, just never. The thought had never.
Yeah, you were more hardcore than, I mean, I went more hardcore because I started getting gigs, but like you were more hardcore in the sense that I was like, one thing that I will always be proud of, and actually someone from Red Rocks, when they were watching me watch them commenting on it, in my worst, I've always had that childlike sort of like wonderment.
Yeah.
And that I always had. I was always like the dorky, you know, in sixth grade, look at the stars. We can't be alone. You know, yeah. like I didn't know who Carl Sagan was. So I was like 35. So I always had that. And then if I felt like my wonderment got stripped as I started hanging out with more hardcore atheists and stuff, but you, it's so fascinating.
God bless my dad, but my bedtime reading as a child, he would come read books with me, and Carl Sagan's Cosmos was one of the books.
That's incredible.
And
then
my dad was big into astronomy, and we would go look at the stars, and he used it as a teaching opportunity for atheism. He'd be like, look at what nothing we are compared right. to this, you know, grandeur. So that was my background.
Wow.
But to what you were saying earlier, I wish I had understood earlier on what a mystical experience it is to become Christian. And when I first encountered Christianity, I encountered it from too much of a box checking perspective. I come from a long line of engineers. I have that kind of mind that I have to understand if something makes sense, if the ideology is internally consistent.
That's how you're going
to
make me big on TikTok.
Exactly. I've got multiple spreadsheets for everything. so that element was there, and it's good that it was there, but I didn't really get it for a while. I mean, when I first converted, I thought that being Christian was going to be pretty much like being an atheist with some different views and less free time on Sundays. That's kind of what this is.
The brunch gets moved to like mid-afternoon.
Right, exactly. It was like a year of that I thought that's what it was. Whoa. But then when I went through some hard times, and I went through some very hard times, I realized that it is a giving yourself over to the person who is love incarnate. Yeah. A guy who I'd love to say it's a philosopher, it was actually a blogger, one time said it well, that when we say that God is love, we're not saying what God is. We are saying what love is.
Oh,
and it's becoming a Christian is a very intimate encounter with that person. And that person becomes part of you.
Right.
So when you talk about feeling that love, even when someone's, you know, being a douchebag on Instagram or whatever, when you talk about still feeling that love, it's because the source of love, Christ, is part of you in this very mystical way. And so you don't have to do everything of your own power anymore.
Do you have, I said this when I was on The Basement, but you remember when you were an atheist, all you wanted to do was like debate people.
Yeah.
And I had that, and I would memorize my little Richard Dawkins talking points like lock and load. And actually I remember one of the moments that I was like, I don't want anything to do with this community, is I saw someone do that after Hurricane Katrina. Someone on Twitter posted a clip of like this poor old black woman crying out to God. And he was just like, God made that hurricane. And even
I had a moment like,
dude, at the time I was like opening for like Richard Dawkins and shit. And I was just like, geez, is that my community? Yeah. Like, go get a boat and some supplies, dickhead. Like that's what you're adding to the conversation. Right. And, but I said this to Tim, when I became a Christian, there was no part of me that felt any need whatsoever to debate anyone, because it is this mystical feeling that the old atheist in me would have been like, yeah, it's because you don't have evidence. It's a feel it. Yeah, man. Yep. And, you know, even my brothers who are secular liberal, when I presented it to them, I'm always, when I present to them something that's not their viewpoint, I'm like, okay, I have to have my talking points. And I was like, hey, this is the way it is. I feel really good about my life. But the end.
By the way, that's the best way to do it, because I kind of went the opposite direction.
My
conversion was so intellectual. I ended up in a couple of really public beefs, the biggest one with PZ Myers. The first Google result.
One of my old friends.
Yeah. The first Google result for my name used to be, Jennifer Fulweiler, colon, vacant-eyed, mindless cluelessness personified.
Wow.
If you Googled my name, that was the first result from a beef I got in with.
Going to be honest, still trade you.
Yeah, right.
I would still trade you.
Yeah. That's actually...
That's Jamie, at least some good writing.
Jamie knows a few things about rough Google searches.
Ooh, oh boy. Yeah. So you almost felt like you had to defend it.
Well, I just had that nerdy, you know, probably a little bit on the spectrum sense of like, yeah. I like facts and information, and my atheist friends keep saying how intellectually honest they are and that they like the truth,
right,
and they like science. And so since we are all truth-seeking people here, I will simply explain to you the historical, philosophical, and theological case for Christianity. And you guys, I'll see you all at church on Sunday. This should be slam dunk.
Right, right.
But right. That is not that you can't debate someone into falling in love. And Christianity is ultimately a process of falling in love.
Right. What a beautiful, yeah. And you know, it's also just there's, because I'm not that guy. I'm never going to be the apologetics guy. I'm always going to be the like, don't you feel it? and I really respect my friends who can do that. And, you know, it is needed, I guess, to a point. But it's so fascinating to me that that's how you, it was cool. Cause Sean, who's read your book, we're too good of friends for me to read it now. I'm going to, I really could know. Cause we've never talked about this.
Yeah.
And I wanted to learn about it for the first time on the podcast. And Sean, when Sean was telling me, and of course, knowing you, I was like, of course she did, that you came at it from a more intellectual approach. I thought that was so cool because to me, even still, the intellectuals are on the other side. And
oh, I see.
That's just, those cliches are still just, you know what I mean? Where I'm like, okay, I'm like the lovable dum-dum. I'm like Lenny from A Vice and Men being like, tell me about the rabbits in heaven. And then the dude with the gun is the scientist and is like, climate change is going to kill us all. And then I die. And like, he might be right, but like, I'm going down smiling, you know? That's how I'm to sum up Christianity. Clip it. But like, so that's so cool.
I'm jealous though of your ability to feel it.
But like I'm that. Sort of jealous because when people are like, again, this is going to sound so like childish, when people are mean to me, it is nice to have it. But I will say the first book that got me to consider Christianity was C.S. Lewis. And I feel like similar approach to you.
Yes. Yes. Was it Mere Christianity?
Sure was.
Yeah. Yeah. That was same for me.
Same
that
for book, you.
Yeah. Yeah. It just changed everything for me.
What was it about it? Was it that he was an atheist? Was it about like, he's just a good writer? Was it?
Yeah. One of the things I've found is that if you're an atheist, especially if you've been one for a very long time, you really can't read things that were written by lifelong believers. They don't speak the same language. They just have a whole different lexicon, yep, a whole different paradigm for seeing the world. So yeah, C.S. Lewis was not only an atheist, but he was actually in the literal trenches in World War I. Right. He had seen very deep human suffering.
Yeah.
And that was one thing as an atheist that I was honestly, and I still kind of stand by this, that I was a little tired of hearing upper middle class Christians, you know, wax philosophical about suffering and all that.
Right.
It's like, really, was it suffering when they didn't have sushi at your private school that one day? You know, that, I'm glad that the Lord got you through that.
That's
you
why
know?
Jesus died, and, is to get sushi the next week.
Right, exactly. And so I respected C.S. Lewis. And when he made the case for natural law, which is the quote, I can almost quote it verbatim, where he says that in, you know, you study the whole world, and I studied anthropology in college, so this resonated with me. You study every tribe, every civilization, any time, place in history, and there is a certain natural law that runs through all of them that is counter to pure survival of the fittest. Mm. So, for example, you really can't find any society anywhere where a man would be honored for double crossing all of the people who had been kindest to him.
Sure.
And C.S. Lewis brings us into, But why not? If that's beneficial for survival, why wouldn't you just go kill people even if they were nice to you? Right. If you look at us as true, pure animals, we're not acting in the way that you would expect. And so from really kind of an observational scientific perspective, you see that the human animal seems to have some sort of contact with some kind of different plane, different paradigm, different dimension that other animals do not. Mm. And that was a very nerdy way of saying, like, maybe something else is out there, you know?
No, that's better than my, like, I feel it in my heart. Hello, it's me, Jamie. Please don't fast forward. This is not a commercial about shaving your balls or BetterHelp, although I'm sure they're great. And if you mess up shaving your balls, maybe you need BetterHelp. I don't know. They don't give us money. Who does support us is you. And if you want to stay in touch with us, if you want to read my thoughts on mental health, on this journey I'm on, I won't use the word journey. If you want to be first to find out about tour dates, all of that good stuff, the best way to stay in touch with us, the best way to support us, the best way to join the community is to sign up for the newsletter. We really appreciate you guys. We want to give back to you like you give to us. And so the way we will be doing that is through this newsletter. So if you want to subscribe, you can find the link in the bio or underneath the video or in the podcast description. Wherever you are listening or watching, exists a link for the newsletter. Thank you again. We'll see you in the back row. But like what I noticed too is how blown away were you by, the thing that's been the craziest to me is I assumed that I would show up to church and they would all have like ARs strapped around them that just be like a big picture of like Boy George with like an X, like, if you fade out the Boy George, they can turn the X into a cross.
Yeah.
And then some sort of white nationalism speech. Right. And then we all go like bomb Planned Parenthood, whatever.
Yeah.
And I have never met in my life nicer, kinder. I mean, when I even like told my pastors about like, I took them all separately out to lunch, except they paid, told them my entire backstory because I thought I would get kicked out of church. And the way that everybody from, you know, the female worship leader to the young dude who runs the groups to the older pastor to like the way they legitimately come at you with just such almost like laughable forgiveness and kindness. And you see the way they are. And again, there are horrific examples of shitty religious people. And those people have quite honestly ruined religion for a lot of people and ruined Jesus. And we, you know, one of the big, quick tangent, but one of the, big atheist things was they would talk about how much violence was caused. Anytime someone would go, you know, well, Stalin was an atheist, we'd just go, the Crusades. And my pastor did a sermon on church hurt a couple weeks ago, Doug, and he goes, the Crusades were people. They were broken people. That wasn't Jesus. And that's so much of church hurt. It's, yeah, if you are relying on people instead of Jesus. I mean, that's the whole thing with Christianity, where I thought Christians were the most judgmental, but it's like, of course they're going to be the most forgiven, because the whole premise is that like, we're the screw ups. That's why Jesus had to come down. That's why Jesus had to die, because like, we can't do it on our own. And so to me, Christians who are really living Christ, like they see that, which is why they're so forgiving, because they will actually admit and they know that they're just as screwed up as you are, which is kind of how this podcast started. We're just as screwed up as each other.
Right, right. And for the Crusades and all the terrible things that people have done, everything from wars in the name of Christianity to stupid Instagram comments, which I get all the time.
Right. Pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
The Crusades, right. And shitting on your stand-up.
I mean, let's be real. One is worse. You know, the people on Instagram who tell me that I need to get back into the kitchen and to be a good Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's worse than the Crusades.
It's a digital crusade.
Yeah. So, what I've ultimately found, having spent a long time in this space now, is there will always be a fairly significant percentage of people who use any religion. I mean, and you see this across religion. They find a religion that suits their undiagnosed mental illness.
Yeah.
And they use the structures and the tenets of that religion to be an asshole.
Yeah.
And they justify it through, you know, they find some loopholes in the legality. And again, it could be any religion. Like you can make it work with anyone, and you're going to have that in every religion. And so you just have to understand, when you become religious, you will end up surrounded by people, not like it's all the people. There will be a strong contingent of people who are using this belief system to just mask their undiagnosed mental illness. They justify they're crazy and their actions lashing out of unresolved trauma as like it's from God. It's like the ultimate form of narcissism.
Yeah.
So of course that group is always going to be attracted to religion, but you have to understand these are not people who have encountered Christ.
Right. The next sketch I want to do is about the next like dating sketch I want to do. I want to do one where it's a jobless guy who keeps demanding that his wife, who makes all the money, submits to him. And he's just like,
that's pretty funny.
There's like a king doesn't have time to work or like whatever.
That's pretty funny.
And then when she's like, all right, well, if you want me to submit, then, you know, like, I guess you can get it. Well, I mean, no, not that.
Right.
But like,
not like that.
Just like, get, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you see that, and it's, you can use that as an example of Christians are bad, or you can, you know, it's the thing with, I'm going from one controversial issue to another, with like cops, like once I started meeting good cops, you know, who's the most upset about things like George Floyd? Cops need to be far more upset than, like, you know, the college liberal who's, you know, tweeting to defund the police, because like this now affects like the cops' safety. Right. This is, you know, good cops became good cops because they want to protect people. Christians became Christian because they wanted to live like Jesus. So, you know, it's actually the Christians who are doing it right, who are going to be the most upset when they see it being used for nefarious purposes. It's going to be good cops who get the most upset when they see racism on the street.
Yeah. And when people say, well, what, how could you still be part of that religion? It's like, look, if someone breaks into my house and tears it up and spray paints it and robs it, my reaction is not to like, oh, I have to get a different house now. I'm going to kick that person out of my house and I'm going to go after them.
Right.
So I'm not abandoning my house because someone broke in and did something really
bad. Yeah, it's not
bad.
Suddenly like your house isn't a good house.
Right. Yeah, it's like you just have to get the evil people out of there and punish them and hold them accountable.
Right. All houses matter. Do you tell me about the... walk me through the like being so opposed to having kids... you know, for me, I had one of my favorite old stand-up bits, one of the only ones I can probably still listen to, was about just wanting to be the cool uncle and not wanting to have kids and how parents are all projecting, which is hilarious because that was clearly me projecting. And when I look back on it, did I really hate parents? Did I really think having kids was bad? Did I really want to be an uncle, or was I scared and didn't think and was told that I wouldn't be able to do that? And so then I was projecting.
Were you speaking from unresolved trauma?
Yeah. Well,
you didn't experience love. You knew that parenthood is sort of the ultimate act of love. So you didn't feel capable of stepping into that.
What's funny is I was about to be like, I don't want to say anything bad because what if my mom and dad are listening, but they're not because they don't love me. So it's fine. I mean, all of that. So for you, was it masking? Did you just not see it in the cards? And then what was the switch? Like, did you just get knocked up, or did you like decide like, no, I want to try this?
So, okay. What happened was I was very immersed in this very American individualist idea. I mean, I moved all around, but my dad's family is from Texas. So my roots are in the most individualistic state, in the most individualistic culture. And people don't understand who live in the West. People do not understand how pathologically individualistic our culture is and how different that is from the way people in history typically saw the meaning of life and all of that.
Right.
So I just bought into that hook, line, and sinker that the way to be happy is to think about yourself all the time and then to craft a life where you can do whatever you want all the time.
Feel
you
good.
See, you see this in modern self-help culture and personal development culture. They'll be like, you have to have your 5 a.m. ice bath. And yeah. then you have to be doing your deep work by 6:14 a.m. And it has to happen every day or else you'll never be a trillionaire.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, so that doesn't work if you have a family.
Yeah. My friend coined the term deep work. Shout out Cal. He probably listens.
You know Cal Newport?
Cal's one of my best friends.
Really?
He's great. He's actually not like that. And we've had this kind of conversation.
Nice.
He's the best.
That's but so cool.
I know. I'm so glad you brought up the self-help world and the new agey spiritual world. Because that's where I was before this. And it felt, I like getting shit done. You like getting shit done. I want to talk about that later. But it's all just like hustle for you.
Well, and isolate yourself
right.
because you can't do any of the advice that is out there in the self-help world if anyone is actually depending on you in an intimate way.
Right.
And this doesn't even have to be about having children. I mean, if you're just kind of part of this village life where let's say your aunt lives nearby and right when you're about to take your ice bath to get on your trillionaire grind set, your aunt is having a really hard time and she calls you crying and saying, you know, she's sad because she misses her husband who passed away. And to be able to take that time and say, you know what, I'm going to spend an hour doing this. And this is
not
what was on my Google calendar.
Right.
This wasn't on my habits app.
Yeah. Go get my B12 shot once.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's, you have a choice. You can put efficiency over love or love over efficiency, but A culture that puts love and human connection first is a very inefficient culture.
Right.
Notice that when Americans go to cultures that have, they still have those historical Christian ideas like Italy, Mexico, Old World, France, we always complain that they're very inefficient. Yeah. They're like, no one in Italy can get anything done. Right, because they're over at mama's house having some new spaghetti that she
homemade,
tried. Homemade, yeah. And their five sisters are there talking to them. Their babies are running around. It's like, yeah, I was 2 hours late for the thing because I was hanging out with my familia.
They say the same thing about Hawaii, where they're like, the Hawaiians are so lazy and whatever. Yeah. It's like, number one, bitch, we colonize them.
Yeah.
Then we like outprice them because Mark Zuckerberg needs another house. So the locals can't even afford to live there. The only reason the locals stay there is because they know they're the only ones who can properly steward the aina, which is what they call the land. And so they would rather suffer in poverty than leave and see what like we're doing to it. And so when it comes to laziness and whatever, it's the same deal. You go to an actual family dinner. And I mean, this is like, it's like the most extravagant food. They went and they hunted the pig
that's
themselves.
Their priority.
Yes.
It's efficiency their family. Yep. Is not efficiency of their to-do list is not their priority.
Getting a Howley Taurus, a snow cone, like is like way below like feeding my family and hunting a pig.
Yeah. Yeah. And my dad grew up in Mexico. So in my childhood, I spent a lot of time in Mexico.
Cool. Okay.
And yeah, and it was, you know, if there was a party that was supposed to start at 8, the lights would still be off at 9:30 p.m.
Right.
And then people would show up with their babies and their kids, you know, around 10. And everyone, including the babies and kids, would, you know, party all night. And that's just so different than our American individualistic culture. So I really bought into that American idea that I have to be on my grind and I have to have my atomic habits and, you know, do everything perfectly every day. And there is no room for real human connection in that kind of life. So I said, I don't want kids because I want to be happy.
Wow.
I don't want to have to, mess up my schedule that is perfect for happiness. Like, what if I couldn't travel or whatever?
Right.
And what was
kind of thought about this recently too, even wanting to have kids, I will kind of click back in it. Cause I've read all those books. A lot of them have helped me.
Yeah.
And so I'll think about that for like a split second. Keep going. Sorry.
Yeah. So one of the things that changed was when I mentioned earlier that doctor told me I wouldn't be able to have kids.
Right.
Then I was like, well, now I want it. You know, you're told that you always want what you can't have. Then I met my husband and we just clicked so well. I think when you meet the right person, it changes your view.
That's
of,
how I feel.
Of having kids.
Never wanted kids until I met her. And same with her.
Yeah.
And then we were just like, oh, it's because we couldn't see having a fan like thank God we didn't bring anyone into these old relationships.
Right. Because true love is always generative by its nature. You see this This is the nature of God. God's love is always generative, meaning it expands. A group gathers. I have a cousin who is a monk, actually, Mount Angel Abbey in Oregon. Fascinating guy. And he was talking about how you see this with religious orders. If the true love of Christ is there, you see it expanding. You see more people joining your monastery. I'm actually going up there. They have a wine festival that they do to celebrate the Feast of Saint Benedict. Benedictine. So yeah, it's really cool that. By the way, I didn't even know I was related to him until my conversion.
Whoa.
So yeah, that was kind of interesting. So anyway, but you see people gathering around this, you know, this monastery because love is always generative.
Right.
So when I encountered the
love, as are wine festivals.
Right. They're true. Well, love leads from wine festivals, which leads to people, you know, and pregnancy sometimes.
Yep.
So it's
full circle.
So I met my husband and that changed. And then, you know, one of the things as part of my conversion, and I know this is, you know, controversial and nobody else agrees with this,
right.
But I became convinced of the historical Christian arguments against contraception.
Yeah.
And because all Christian denominations were against it until like 1930. And I just researched why. And we decided we're not doing contraception. Yeah. And that is,
and, just weighing it.
You know, when you drink a lot, that will that'll lead to having a pretty big family.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know enough about the contraception thing to go into it. I will have you back and I will do my research.
That'll be a popular episode. Everyone loves to hear about that.
I will say, I know a lot of women, from Christian women to, you know, liberal feminist women who like got off birth control and their life has turned around when it comes to depression, when it comes to sex drive, when it comes to, and you know, as a sort of like selfish atheist dude, I was always just like, I need to date someone who's on birth control because fucking, never thinking about like what it's doing to them.
Yeah.
That was something I never even thought about until.
And by the way, I should jump in and say, there are some belief systems that are like, you can't do anything to avoid pregnancy. You have to have as many kids as possible. I seem to have lived that by having 6 babies in 8 years.
Amazing.
But that's not the historical Christian view. It's more like, it's basically an abstinence-based child spacing method. But I almost died in my 6th pregnancy, and that was 10 years ago. And so we still don't use contraception, but we did stop having babies because of my health.
Right.
So I just want to say, I'm not like, you know, the Duggars are like, you have to have as many kids as you, that's not my belief.
I was excited you had 6 kids and you're still fucking.
Yeah.
That's good. That's another thing people say. That's another thing I would like to shoot down, that myth. That's another thing that I was just like, I believe that like you can still have romance. You can still flirt. You can still do all these things. And I think that people tell you that go.
It enhances it. If you do it the right way. Like,
wait, tell me, say yes.
Okay. So there is this absolutely stupid idea in our culture that babies are antithetical to sex, which is, think about this. This sets women up to be at war with their bodies. If it is true that being sexy and having sex is like babies, car seats, bottles, diapers, that's the least, you know, that has nothing to do with sex. Think about how much that puts women at war with their fertility.
Yeah.
In a culture that tells you, you have to be hot, you have to be hooking up. When our media portrays images of, let's say, someone hooking up at the club, the next logical image in our stupid culture is not like installing a car seat in your car and having a diaper bag. No, because we completely sever in the modern American mind the concept that babies are a natural extension of sexuality.
Right.
And that's what women are just, they're literally going insane because they live in a culture that tells them that a key part of a fulfilling life is to be part of hookup culture, but God forbid you can't have a baby.
Right.
And so women are just like tortured all the time.
Well, and then you add like porn to the mix where it's like guys are, one, they have these like absurd expectations because they can always get hotter, smaller, Asian-y-er. And But also it's like they can go to that instead of go to their wife. And then, you know, I talked about this with Josh Broom, who used to be a porn star. They'll be
is
like,
is this a friend of yours too, by the way? So you have like
podcast.
Cal Newport and porn stars. You have the most diverse group. And then pastors.
Pastors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, if you ever throw a party, like I'm going to your wedding, Jamie, because I want to meet, like I'm sitting in between Cal Newport and a porn star. Like I want that experience.
Love that. God, our wedding's gonna be cool. It's gonna be weird. Never thought I would have a wedding, dude.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
So
I
excited about that.
Okay,
no,
so
it's okay.
Ahead,
I've been derailing you this whole time. So, the porn star, right? We were talking about you don't have to worry about rejection. You don't have to flirt, and then so you'll go to porn just to get off. And then when someone confronts you about porn, or maybe you have an affair or whatever, you go, well, she's not having sex with me. And it's like, well, right, because you aren't even trying. You're not making her feel sexy. You're not flirting. You're not doing all these things because you just go to porn. So now you have the woman who's super self-conscious, doesn't feel sexy, whatever. The guy who's checked out because he can just go, you know, jerk it upstairs. And of course you're not. And then a bunch of kids running around. Right. Of course you're not going to have sex. But what if instead you prioritized and you figured out this is the time we have sex and you still flirt with your wife and, you know, you do all these things. You're probably going to have a lot more sex and be able to crush that stereotype.
And yeah, and you see, you when you're tapped
and you
into
love
that,
each other more.
Yeah, and you're tapped into that idea that love is generative. So like that's sexy. That's cool. Pregnancy's cool. It's
right.
Sexy. Babies are there. It's there's something that is that kind of sexual and sexy about having, you know, babies and kids. It's like
that's
great.
And title, we should title this podcast "Babies Are Sexy" and just see what happens.
Oh right, yeah. See if you can get canceled again. You know, yeah. But by the way, let me say one of the things when I encountered Christianity in its worldview, its belief system, I felt like I had discovered the owner's manual to the human soul. It was like I'd been trying to operate this thing and it was like just not working. And then I got the owner's manual with Christianity.
Yeah.
And so many of the views that I had made fun of, really made fun of as an atheist, when you actually see people living them and you live them, you're like, oh, this is actually a much better life. Like I heard someone point out with porn that he was talking about how he gave up porn when he became a Christian. And he said, you know, it occurred to me that all those years watching porn, what it's doing is training your primal brain to believe that other men hook up with women and you just kind of sit back in the bushes and like touch yourself while other men are getting some.
You're cuckolding
and
yourself.
Like, That's not freedom. That is actually like really like beta, you know, behavior. And he's like, it's funny that this traditional Christian view that I blew off is like, oh, it's
they're the Puritan.
It's he's like, actually, that is, you know, sort of the alpha thing to be like, no, I don't watch other men hook up. Like, that's so gross.
Christianity is the key to better sex. It's something
it
you
really
will
is.
Never hear.
Yeah.
Right. Because even like with porn. You know, guys who have trouble sustaining having sex for a while. One of the reasons is because when you're looking at porn, you're not treating yourself, right? It's not like a girl. I'm not like lighting candles, drawing a bath, and going to Pornhub, right? You are shamefully.
That is so funny if you did, though. You like, are little time for Jamie.
Little Jamie time. Have
you're
like
so,
chocolate covered
like,
strawberries.
You're so beautiful. Has anyone told you that today?
Rose petals to the bathtub that just lead to like
so
bang
funny.
Bus on the web browser. If a guy is jerking it, they are quietly stealthy, like you said, in the shadows, making sure no one's coming upstairs. They're on high alert and they're trying to come as soon as possible. So you transfer what you're used to having sex with a real woman. Your body is going, finish this as soon as possible.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
And, but like when I was watching porn, there were times when it would affect me and I would suddenly be like, oh shit, I have no stamina.
You can only have sex four times a day.
but like I would be like, oh, I'm like the 2 second whatever. And it's because I was training my brain for that.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
Where it's now I'm just in fucking Christ-like God, head of the household mode. But I
except just that you're fornicating.
Except that I'm sinning and going to hell. I wonder.
Yeah, you're on a journey.
I'm on a journey. I have derailed.
You might want to publish this podcast under a pseudonym. You know, yeah, this is yeah. John
Clipstein. Corstein.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Before we run out of time, I want to circle to your confidence. That has been something that has helped me so much in my life, and not just the confidence of like, which you can talk about again, I'm going to sell out a theater tour on my own. Cause I've struggled with industry not getting me, and like watching people I respect build their own audience and do it on their own terms is so cool. But also I think even from like a Christian point of view, when I first got baptized, I was like, I'm not allowed to get famous anymore. This podcast.
I remember we talked about this.
But especially now that this podcast is about Christianity, I'm going to struggle with that. Yeah. Like this morning, I was like, there's a great chance that this sketch that I posted will be my first sketch to hit 500,000. You think it could hit 1,000,000. And I'm going to be like, yeah. I did it. Pause for Christ. And, you know, and that feels weird. And granted, like my motives are pure. The motives for this podcast, I didn't pitch this podcast. This podcast was offered to me. The money came. It very much was spiritual. You know, one day me and Tim are going to talk about how it happened. And like to say that God wasn't in the room would be insane. But it's very tricky. It's very tricky because when I was like, I want to be like Jesus, that means I want to be, you know, poor and die in a prison cell, you know, exclaiming my love of Christ and helping homeless people. And you said something so beautiful to me once, because I was like, it's either I play Madison Square Garden or I help homeless people. And you were like, dude, right now you're giving them sandwiches you can barely afford. If you play Madison Square Garden, think about how much good you can do. You know, when you talked about, you know, I can make foundations for homeless people. But you even said something so specifically sweet where you were like, with the kids I teach jujitsu, you were like, you could just afford to throw them a party if you wanted. And I was like, yeah, I could barely afford to like buy one of them lunch if I was mentoring them. And I thought that was really cool. So talk about like if you've had any struggles, especially since a lot of your career, not so much right now, you're like super stand-up based. But, you know, before when you were building an audience, a lot of it was around religion, like what that balance is. And also just I think in general, this idea that if we are to be virtuous, we can't be happy.
Right. Yeah. So this was a big struggle for me. And I talked to, I talked to monks, nuns, people, you know, people who'd given up their whole life to follow Jesus.
I want to see your monk spreadsheet.
Yeah, exactly. I would talk to them about, you know, what am I doing here with this career? Is it inherently sinful that I'm seeking, you know, money and success? And on the money piece, one of the things they pointed out is, you know, the whole salvation history was a rich man played a pretty big role in it, that Joseph of Arimathea, it was his tomb that they put Christ in, but he had to have been wealthy to have that tomb. That wasn't Christ's tomb. It wasn't like he's like, guess what, guys? I know what's going to happen. So I have this tomb, like it's all reserved. No, right. That belonged to a rich guy.
Whoa, I never
and
knew
so
that.
So he used it to, that is where Christ was put, in the tomb where the death was conquered once and for all. Whoa. I mean, so.
Yo, that, if I kill myself, you can use my tomb, Jesus.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Again.
Right. So.
That's
so,
wild. Yeah, I never knew that.
So you see Jesus using someone's wealth for good. And then in terms of wanting to have impact, wanting success, someone said to me once, they're like, what? So you want it to be all atheists and TikTok Wiccans who have a platform? Like, is that, you don't think Christians should have a voice in the marketplace of ideas?
Right.
And I think the key is, what is your source of love? And you and I both struggle with, we do gravitate to fame and Madison Square Garden and things like that, because we want to feel love that was missing in our lives early on. And it is okay to say that is there, and that's always going to be there, and it's something that I need to watch to not lead me down bad territory. But again, to take it back to what we said at the beginning of the podcast, God brings good out of everything. It is what he does. And I think, you know, the fame game, the viral success game, you've been in it longer than I have. And I think what you'll see is any normal person who doesn't have a lot of trauma in their past would quit after like a month of it. They'd be like, this sucks so much. I can't deal with the highs and lows. And I think that God takes those of us who honestly kind of need it and maybe not always in the most healthy way because we're the only ones who won't quit.
Right.
And so we're his only shot at Christians having a voice in the marketplace of ideas.
Right.
And so I think what we need to do is watch that side of ourselves, say that is within me. I'm always going to have that trauma-based, you know, I want to feel loved by the masses, but I can use it for good. I can turn it over to God. I can make sure that every day, every morning, every afternoon, I'm recentering with God and saying, God, you are my only source of love. I pray. We have some great prayers like the Litany of Humility, the St. Francis prayer. They're great prayers for just recentering yourself on your motivation being love.
The motivation. Yeah.
And so that's how you can combine your less healthy motives with living out God's purpose.
Right.
You turn your less healthy motives over to God and you say, yeah, I'm willing to be one of the soldiers here who goes through the BS to actually have a Christian voice in the marketplace of ideas.
And I think even some of the ones, the prosperity guys we see with like the super fancy cars and you know, Tim talked about this on an episode of The Basement where, you know, it's one thing to be super successful and have a nice house for your family and take care of your kids. It's when people, the church is falling apart.
Yeah.
The worship room is falling apart, but the office is like gold studded or their Lexus is parked out front. I mean, these were examples he's seen.
Yeah.
And I think that was someone who maybe even started with, maybe even God did want to have that role. And then the traumas, they didn't keep in check. And so it just got away from them.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I think even back in my day, when I was doing it as just like a liberal atheist dude, good intentions, man. Trauma went unchecked.
Yeah.
And then I let it get away from me.
Yep,
it was suddenly just like attention, ego, all that stuff. And I think checking in with your motives is really important. You know, something else that I love that you just brought up was something that's very new to me. I talked about how I have this wonderment, but Corey, that singer I was telling you about from Red Rocks, he pointed out, he used the word awe. Mm-hmm. And I thought I have that, and I do. But when it comes to stuff like this, I don't. So when you said God chose us, to me, I would go, this is the bullshit mess I've made. How can God help me make the best out of it? Instead of what you said inspires so much more awe, which is God saw our trauma, knew that we had this skill, that we could be the only ones to put up with that. The example Corey gave me was on this podcast. I talked about my church, Red Rocks, and I said this to him where I go, man, thank God I walked into that church because they spoke my language. They were humble. They had humility, all this stuff. And he goes, yeah. Or if you look at it with a little more awe, God put you in that church because they spoke your language. And he talked about like there were people, you know, there were people that would not have responded to anyone but Paul. And Paul came along and he goes, hey man, I see you're, you know, worshiping these idols. Like, what if I just like tell you about like this like other way? And like those were guys who were like, man, I didn't think I was a church guy, but Paul gets me.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't think I was a church girl, but Jen gets me. And so even back then, there were people who were like, thank God I showed up at this temple. And not that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, and Paul persecuted Christians. He killed one of the first Christian martyrs. I mean, he had a rough, but he murdered someone. Like he had a rough background.
His Google search, and, not fun.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Puts us and both to shame.
And God was like, you are exactly the voice that I need to reach these people.
Right. And then, but then the next part, by the way, that would have been, if I was more of a pro, the line to end on, because it was so good. But just this question is just going to kill me. When do you also keep yourself in check, not just with the fame and success, but there are times where my girlfriend just goes, your voice is going to be so important to get people to God. When does that drift over to fucking psycho ego? You know what I mean? Where it's like, I think that the good thing about me is I know that it's because I talk about what a mess I am. And so my God-given gift is that sort of vulnerability, making people feel less broken. It's not like it's like, oh, I'm just so hot, people are going to want to be Christians. It's like, no, I'm a hot mess. I'm a mess. But, you know, this probably happens to some of these like mega church people, right? It's like, you start off with these intentions of, I want to help bring people to God and happiness and love. But then there's a mission creep there too, that it can go into like, oh, what? I think I'm fucking important enough that I'm a voice for God. That's insane. Like, how do you battle that?
I think the key there is what a nun said to me one time. She's like, you got to stop thinking about yourself so much. I mean, even asking questions of like, is that egomaniacal to say I'm a voice for God? Who are you thinking about? There's a homeless man who needs a sandwich right outside your door while you're pontificating on, but am I a true? It's like, just that, you know, when you look at the greats of history who just did that humble, great Christian work, they just kind of did their thing. They did what they felt moved to do. And they just didn't worry about it. They kind of laughed at themselves, like, I'm probably the worst voice for God, honestly. Like, I am probably
that's me and you. All
I'm
the time.
Probably the worst.
Yeah.
But this feels like the right thing to do, so I'm going to do it. And again, connecting to prayers like the Saint Francis prayer, like the Litany of Humility. Like in the Litany of Humility, which I say all the time, it's like, let others get the acclaim today. Yeah. Let others get the fame. Let others be loved. And just detaching yourself from the results, I think that's how you stay sane.
Is
you say,
that.
I'm going to do what feels, let me put it this way. You say, I am going to love the world today in the way that I feel called to love the world. So that could be a silly sketch or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to turn the results over to God. Yeah. And it is when we get obsessive about results that we can go off the rails. We're like, but where is the Lexus? Where are my 10 million views? When you just say, I am going to love the world to the absolute max and know that I will do it imperfectly. Yeah. A lot of times I'm not going to get it right all the time, but I'm just going to have a habit of love the world in the unique way that I feel called to love the world today and leave the results totally up to God. That's the key.
And ironically, that's where I've had the most success.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I think that people who aren't in our situation, you can do that with your life.
Yeah.
You can do that with your relationship. You can do that. You can also know that sometimes it's your flaws that will save people.
Yeah.
It's being open about it. To a friend, it's not just trying to put your best self on fucking Instagram. It's like being open about all your stuff. So I asked this question to Tim, and unless it starts to get really repetitive and boring, I might make this a staple question. If you were to describe Jesus to someone who had no idea, never heard of him, other just a part of the world where it's hidden from them or kept from them, how would you describe him?
Wow. Oh.
It could be in God form. It could be the human form.
I would say, if you can go back to a time in your life, and for some people it might just be like 2 seconds, where you couldn't explain what was happening, but you felt so perfectly taken care of and so perfectly loved. And maybe it was just for 2 seconds, but you knew that you were going to be okay, like on an eternal level, and that everything was going to be okay on an eternal level. That was an encounter with Christ.
I don't know how I'm going to ask you to plug your stand-up dates next. That was
come see me on tour.
I'm at the Funny Bone. That was the coolest thing that's ever been said on this show. And now people have to top that. Now I'm going to keep asking this question until someone gives
and you can rate them.
Yeah.
You can be like, well, that really didn't make the cut. You did not describe Jesus.
Not very Christ-like description of Christ. Yeah. What's so funny is you guys listening to this episode and this episode only will know that if we stop asking that question, whoever the last episode was the shitty answer. We're like, this is going to be hard to top. This we got to play Tim Jen's answer, because this is okay. Where can people find you?
Okay. JFComedyTour.com is my tour dates. Instagram is my favorite social media platform. I have an obsessive relationship to Instagram. You can always find me there. I'm just Jennifer Fulweiler, F-U-L-W-I-L-E-R on Instagram. And I also have a podcast, The Jen Fulweiler Show. I love my podcast. I update it every week without fail. So go subscribe to my podcast, The Jen Fulweiler Show.
I will confirm that I will get a voice memo from Jen at 3 a.m, out of breath, being like, responding to you from 3 days ago. I had to tape 3 podcasts in a row before I go tour for 5 months. And oh my God, my kid's crying. Hold on. And it's bananas. I know you don't plug this a ton anymore, at least on socials, but for this conversation and this audience, the book.
Yes. Okay. Something Other Than God is the book that I wrote about my conversion. It took me 5 years. I had to rewrite it from a blank page 3 times to get it right.
This is a bestseller.
It has over 1,000 reviews on Amazon. I mean, it's out there for sure.
I didn't know the rewrite thing.
Yeah. Because I was in the middle of having 6 babies in 8 years as I wrote it. And I had this really tough agent, Ted Weinstein, God bless him. Whoa. And he was not Christian. And he said, I will only represent this book if it is like bestseller quality.
Holy.
And so I had to learn, it took me 5 years. I had to learn how to write a great book.
Wow. Wow. That's insane. Cool. That and tour. And just
can I tell you what the quote of my book is based on?
Yeah.
So C.S. Lewis, it gives me chills every time I say this. C.S. Lewis says, all that we call human history, the wars, the every terrible thing that has happened, is the long, terrible story of man trying to find something other than God which will make him happy. So my book is called Something Other Than God.
Oh,
it's the best title. You can't beat that title.
You can't.
You cannot beat that
title. You can't. Oh my goodness. Listen to me. I love you so much. So genuinely, you're one of the people that makes me the happiest in the world. You saved me at a really, really, really hard time in my life. I didn't think I was going to say this. It's so hard to meet someone so genuine and like sturdy in her convictions, but also like willing to talk about being like flawed and like a mess too. And like to make me feel so, you make me feel so special as your friend, even when I've been suffering, which is like, that's Christ-like as fuck, you know?
Well, the feeling is very mutual. I would have quit comedy about 4 times if it weren't for you. You've changed my life in so many ways, and I am so sincerely excited for every person who is listening to this podcast, because no matter how neurotic you're going to be about it, God is using you as an instrument.
That's it.
And ever since I met you, I've just thought, man, more people need to know this guy. More people need to be friends with this guy, because you're really something special, and it's really exciting to be here.
Amen, sister. Spread the word about the show. You can follow me on Instagram at @TheJamieKilstein. If there are video clips you like, share it, rate it 5 stars, all that stuff, stupid algorithm shit that I wish I didn't have to say. But the most important thing is, if you think part of this could touch someone that you know, who is struggling, who can relate to me and Jen or the other guests we've had on in the past, send it to them. This is going to be a grassroots show. The show is going to be about community, about building a family, just like I found family that's accepted me. And we just love you guys very much. Thank you again. And we'll see you next week in the back row.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Hi, I know you don't want to see more white noise trash on social media, so I'm going to be very quick. If you want to find out what I'm doing, what our show is doing, you can sign up for our newsletter. It is the best way to stay in touch. It's the best way to get offers and exclusive access. You can find the link below. I am done. Thank you. Goodbye.